I know it's here somewhere. Finally. Oh, it's time for the doc. You're listening to Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. Take it away, doctor.
Well, it's that time again, and the doctor is in. It's time once again for Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. And you tuned in to another netcast, which means I guess you didn't have anything better to do. But anyway, just ignore the beeping. It's my phone. My phone likes to beep at me. And I'm using my phone, my Pixel 2 XL, to shoot the program. So, of course, the beeping is close to me. Sigh. Anyway, I trust you will enjoy the program today. It's going to be a bit controversial. So I'm just warning you up front, a little controversial today on several fronts. So stay tuned. See, there goes more beeping. People keep sending me texts and things. Just ignore the beeping. Anyway, we are proud members of the Tech Podcast Network, techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's right here on Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon. We are also proud members of the International Association of Internet Broadcasters. I just enjoy doing that. What can I say? Yes, Fred, I know you don't enjoy it, but I do. So, get over it. All right, let's go to the blog. The blog, of course, in question is drbill.tv, drbill.tv, as it says there on the screen. And this is the blog in which I pontificate upon technology and other things of interest to me. Now, one of the things that I ran across was interesting. A little controversial, but interesting. Let me preface this by saying, of course, that most of you know that I am a Christian. I make no bones about that. I make no apologies about that. But this is not a show. This show right here is not a show where I teach or preach or any of that kind of stuff, okay? So, y'all just calm down. If you want to hear some of that, I have other podcasts where I do that. So, but for this one, we're talking tech. And the tech I want to talk about, the very first item here, is about the Google Home Mini that I got for, let's see, did I get it for Christmas? Yes, I think I did. I got it for Christmas, pretty sure. And it was either Christmas or birthday. They're both very close together. But I really like it. I enjoy it. But somebody discovered that if you ask it certain questions, it has strange answers, which is the case with a lot of things. But hey, that's to be understood. But this one got this person's attention, and they posted a YouTube video, which I have posted on the drbill.tv blog for you to enjoy, if you'd like to. The lady here in question asked, who is Muhammad? And the Google Home responded, well, Muhammad is, you know, this guy that the Muslim religion was founded by him, da-da-da-da. It gave this whole historical thing about Muhammad. Okay. So then she asked about Buddha, and it answered. Then she asked about Jesus. Okay? I mean, most of us know who Jesus is, right? So Google goes, I don't know about that. I can't really answer that question. What? It just answered the question about Buddha and Muhammad and, I don't know, a couple other people. She thought it was strange. I think it's strange. But lest you say, see, Dr. Bill, you think it's some wild conspiracy to exclude Jesus. What I think doesn't matter. What's interesting is, this is the point I wanted to bring out on this tech show. This is a tech show. Is these devices that are voice-activated, artificially intelligent devices are going to answer you based on, how shall I put this, the worldview of the people who designed it, who built it, who programmed it. So Google's people thought, apparently, that answering a question about Jesus would be controversial. So they just decided to cop out and skip the whole thing. They just said, we don't know. Come on, Google. You got to do better than that, okay? Now, since this controversy, or as they might say in England, controversy, I don't know if they really say that in England, but since it occurred, Google has even dumbed down the question further. So now, whether you ask about Jesus or Muhammad or whoever, it only says, religion can be complicated, and I'm still learning. In other words, I ain't going to answer this question, lest I get in trouble. What a cop-out. I mean, come on, Google. We're talking about individuals here who are historic people that have a history about them. I mean, the old answer to the question, they answered from Wikipedia. I mean, come on, Wikipedia. But at least they answered the question. So I just think it's a little disingenuous for them to say, oh, I don't know. Okay? I just thought you might find that interesting. Again, not preaching, not, any of that. Just wanted to share that with you. But what I did want you to think about, consider, is that every question you ask of Alexa, which I have over here, she woke up, Alexa, stop, or Google Home, which I have in the bedroom, either one, if you ask them a question, you're going to get the answer based on whoever programmed it. It's not going to be, pun intended here slightly, the gospel truth, okay, necessarily. It's just going to be their opinion. So keep that in mind. Even if you're asking it questions about what's the fastest processor for a computer, you're going to get an answer based on some criteria. Maybe it's based on somebody running a test of some kind to find out what the answer is. But it's going to be programmed based on whoever programmed it. So keep that in mind. Just saying. All right, next item here. Another voice-activated thing. This is about a commercial that Amazon is preparing for the Super Bowl. And it's very cute. The idea is that Alexa, stop. See, I woke her up again. That she is losing her voice. Which is, of course, silly. However, they're saying that they need a backup voice. They need somebody to voice her since she's losing her voice. So they have Jeff Bezos doing this little teaser commercial to prepare for the Super Bowl commercial that they're going to do about the lost voice. Okay? So I thought that was kind of cool. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing the commercial. Now, how many of you could say that you're looking forward to seeing a commercial? Now, I know that the Super Bowl commercials can be very entertaining and very strange. A lot of them have been very strange. But I'm kind of looking forward to this. This is going to be fun. So these voice-activated artificial intelligences, if you want to call them that, I don't know how intelligent they are kind of getting ubiquitous. They're out there all over the place. Matter of fact, I saw a thing where you can get a little $49 device. They talked about this on TechZilla. A little $49 device you could plug into the cigarette lighter of your car. It pairs with your phone over Bluetooth. I think that's right. Either that or a wired cable, not sure which. And it gives you her voice. And she's able to answer questions and give you traffic and weather and time and all that kind of stuff, play music, right there in your car. Now, I got to admit, that's pretty cool. I think I'm going to get me one of those. So When I get one, I'll review it and let you know about it. But I thought it was cool. Anyway, every so often, I do what I call a geek project. A geek project on the blog, the Dr. Bill blog, is something that I had to do for myself that maybe there's some of you that might want to do the same thing. Okay? Now, I had various reasons to try to derive this information, but I needed the actual RSS feed address, string, URL, off of an iTunes feed. If you look for somebody's podcast, let's say even my podcast, drbill.tv, the Computer Curmudgeon video podcast, if you go out and look for it, then if you use Google, you're going to get the iTunes website address, okay? But if you use it in iTunes, if you do a search within iTunes and look for DR period capital B I L L period capital TV, drbill.tv, and you look at for that in iTunes, you will find the Dr. Bill video podcast. And there's a little thing. Matter of fact, I'll put it up over here. See the little arrow pointing to the little button with a drop down? If you will select that and select copy link, then paste that into your notepad, you can then look at the number in the string that is the podcast ID number. Okay, I know this is getting really techy, but bear with me. You get that ID number, and then you put it in your web browser into a string, which is https://itunes.apple.com/lookup?ID=that number that you derived, %identity=podcast. You say, Dr. Bill, well, hold on. It's all right there in the blog, drbill.tv. You go to that, you'll get that little string, okay? Get that string, enter it, and it will save to your downloads directory a file called 1.txt. Now, what this is a text file that contains JSON code information, okay? Within that is a string that says feed URL and gives you the actual literal RSS feed for that podcast. Whew. Now, in my case, that is http://www.drbill.cc, because that's what we used to use on the program, is CC for Computer Curmudgeon. Still works, drbill.cc/category/dr-bill-netcast/feed/. That is the string that you will see as the feed URL. Now you say, Dr. Bill, why in the world would I go to all that trouble to find that string? Well, here's why. You can now take that string, and rather than having to use iTunes, yeah, maybe you like using iTunes, I don't know, that's fine. But rather than having to use that, you could use any podcatcher software or RSS feed tool, plug that into it, and you go directly to the actual RSS feed of the podcast. Okay? Now, for instance, I have a Google Chrome extension that's called Slick RSS. I really like it. And I could take that, click on Manage within that, and put in the strings of the podcasts I'm interested in. And then I have one whole page within Chrome of all the podcasts that I like to listen to, and I could just click on the links that are displayed in Slick RSS. Now, that's the one I like to use. But there's others. I mentioned here in the article, there's Beyond Pod, which is one you can get off of the Google Chrome store. There is Podcast Republic is another one that you could get out of the Google Podcast or Google store. So, pretty cool that you can actually get the information. You could derive information the information using this little workaround, this little geek project that I had to show you how to do it. Cool. So, next item. Next item is Malware Bytes Patch Bug. In other words, the patch they released has a bug in it that causes slowness on certain PCs, that basically the ones that get this patch. Now, as the guy here in the article says, Charlie Osborne from ZDNet, who wrote the article, he says, 20,000 perfect patches may be under their belt, but it only takes one or two poor ones to raise the ire of users as Malware Bytes discovered. Now, I haven't had any problems with Malware Bytes. I use it. I actually pay for the paid version of Malware Bytes. It is a malware, anti-malware tool that I like to run on my PCs. And I have never had a problem with it. But people that downloaded this patch discovered that they were having problems with spikes in CPU and RAM usage, severe enough to actually freeze and lock up their systems. That's bad. Okay. Now, since then, Malware Bytes has released a new patch that fixes this. And I guess I must have skipped the bad one and just got the good one because I didn't have any problems, all right? But I want to let you know about that. All right. Whoa! Yes, Fred. He got my attention. He's letting us know with a drum roll that it is time for the Geek Software of the Week. Geek Software of the Week this week is Webcam On-Off. This is a little freeware tool that you could get from a site called Sordum, S-O-R-D-U-M, Sordum. It sounds like sorghum, but it's not. It's sordum.org. And this is just a little tool that you can run on your, in my case, my laptop, to turn off the webcam. I don't want anybody seeing me in my underwear. You know what I'm saying? You're right, Fred. Nobody wants to see me in my underwear, okay? Boy, you're so kind, Fred. Anyway, bottom line is, you don't want people spying on you with your webcam. Now, a lot of you say, well, I just put a piece of tape over the lens. Okay, works, but it's a little kludgy. I've seen people put post-it notes over their webcams. Whatever. That's the analog way to do it. This is the digital way to do it. You use this little piece of software, Webcam On-Off, and it gives you this cute little picture of a webcam. You could click it to enable and disable, and you could enable consecutively. Anyway, you could enable it, and then you could click a button to get a little small window that will show you, yep, the webcam's working. And then you can close that and go on about your business. And then turn it off. Now, the reason I did it is because I use Kaspersky antivirus. You say, what does that have to do with anything? Well, Kaspersky reports anything that's happening on your PC that might look suspicious. And one of the things they report is when your webcam comes on and somebody's using it and it ain't you. In this case, it was Microsoft. Microsoft? Yeah, Microsoft has a little program called Census that apparently they go out and they probe your computer. Now, check this out. They probe your computer over the internet to find out what kind of hardware you have, supposedly to help them write patches. And they were using, every time my system booted, it came up and said, Census is using your webcam. What? So, and it would turn off and go away, but I want full control over my computers. It's just my predilection, okay? So, I got this piece of software to turn it off and leave it off unless I want to use it. So, hopefully that Geek Software of the Week will be useful to you. Alrighty. This next thing I want to talk about is based on an email that I got. We had a viewer that sent an email to my Outlook.com address, which I rarely use. But I think it's just that he likes Microsoft stuff. Because he basically told me, hey, Dr. Bill, why are you using DuckDuckGo? Well, first of all, I'm not using DuckDuckGo. I just mentioned it in the last netcast. Don't actually use it. I use Google, which I realized, like he said, they have farms and farms of servers that are harvesting information of what I'm surfing. I know that. I just don't care that they look at where I'm going. Doesn't bother me. That bothers other people, and that's fine. So that's why I mentioned DuckDuckGo, because they are a privacy-based, theoretically, search engine. Okay, so this guy said, why don't you use Bing? Because Microsoft doesn't have all those servers that are watching you all the time. Really? Then why are they looking at my webcam? Anyway, just saying. But, so he said, why don't you try Bing for about 3 months? And you'll see that it's a really good search engine. Well, okay, I already know it's a really good search engine. I really do. I have searched, as a lot of people do, when they do a vanity check. I searched for myself. And the information that it gave me about myself, Dr. Bill Bailey, dr.bill space B-A-I-L-E-Y, Dr. Bill Bailey, if you search that using Bing or Google, the results that come up are the results that I want to come up, which are my websites, okay? So I was pretty impressed. Now, however, I'm a bit, yeah, we were talking about your worldview and where you're coming from and stuff. I'm a bit Microsoft, you know, kind of anti-Microsoft, okay? That's just me. So I'm not really prone to the idea, you know, given to the idea of using Bing. And then he also suggested, oh, and by the way, why don't we talk about browsers? You could use Edge. I'm like, yeah, well. If I was going to leave Google Chrome, I would probably go back to Firefox. I used to use Firefox before Chrome came along. Because I wasn't about to use Internet Explorer. Okay? Now, as I told this dude when I wrote him back, yeah, you got a point. Bing is a pretty good search engine. And to be honest, I'll be honest with you, Edge is not a bad browser. Okay? I just personally am part of the Googleverse. I have a Google Pixel 2 XL. I have a Google Home now. I have a Google account that I use, which, by the way, if you want a secondary email, my real email, I give right there on the lower thirds, which is drbill@drbillbailey.net. But I also have drbillbailey@gmail.com, and I have drbillbailey@outlook.com. Okay? I'm equal opportunity. And I check all of those addresses. I use them for testing, mostly. Because drbill@drbillbailey.net is my actual email address that I use for everything else, for my real personal account. So, there you go. Thought that was interesting. Appreciate you guys actually watching and sending me questions and thoughts. I really do. Because it shows there are people out there watching the program, and I'm not just doing this, you know, for the fun of it. Okay, yes, I am doing it for the fun of it. But if you enjoy it, good. All right, next item. Speaking of anti-Microsoft, Microsoft, as we know, is the evil empire. Yes. Okay, as the picture says, the evil empire. All right, but there is a tutorial from an organization that wrote me called Guru99. I guess they're the 99th guru out there. I don't know. But Guru99 sent me a link to a free, now I'll remind you, it is free, Linux tutorial. It is a guide for beginners. You can learn online in 7 days. You can learn Linux. And it has all kinds of stuff. The fundamentals of Linux, getting started. They go into advanced stuff like redirection and pipes and grep and sort. Regular expressions. You can learn about environment variables and on and on and on and on. Shell scripting, how to use a terminal, all that stuff that you might be interested in with Linux, and it's a free tutorial. So I encourage you to check that out. the more of you that check it out and leave the evil empire, the better off we'll all be. There you go. Okay. The rebellion. Okay. People are moving to Linux, by the way. Next item here. This is about a guy who works for a company called OnlyOffice, which is also an open source office suite. You could buy support for it and everything. But at his work, he was using an old Windows XP machine. That's bad. You don't want to use Windows XP anymore because you will get eaten by viruses. And they don't even make security patches for Windows XP anymore, okay? So get off of Windows XP. So that's what he decided to do. But instead of going to Windows 10, he went to Linux. And he talked about how he and several people in his office went to Linux. Their reasoning was it's fast and smooth to operate. It's highly customizable. It's relatively newcomer friendly. Really, it is, truly. It's challenging with the basic components. However, it's very rewarding in its returns. It's safe and secure. That it is. And it's an exciting experience for anyone who seeks to refresh their workplace, he says in his article. Now, I like Linux Mint. That's what I use on my laptop. I really like it. And personally, I'll tell you that when I was working at High Point Regional before I was disabled, I decided to do a test. And I took my machine and I did a backup of my Windows build, which was a work build. And I built a Linux Mint machine on this work PC. Then I proceeded to use that for 6 months straight without having to go back to Windows. And I was able to communicate with people in the office. I was able to write and send and receive documents because I used LibreOffice, which will read and write Microsoft Word compatible documents. I was able to use spreadsheets. I was able to do everything I needed to do, manage servers, including Citrix servers, and VMware servers from a Linux desktop. So, yes, it can be done, and yes, I have done it. Now, you say, well, okay, Dr. Bill, why did you go back to Windows? Well, you know, at work, there are rules. And the rules are you're supposed to be using the desktop we give you, including the build we give you. I said, okay. I saved the build. I'll wipe the machine, and I'll restore that build. And I was back using Windows, okay? And, you know, I also work with Windows machines, so I wanted to be able to stay current with Windows as well. So, but I did prove it could be done. Now, next item, really interesting one. I really want you to read this article. Go check it out, drbill.tv. The article is called Kids Learn the Wonders of Open Source. This is about a school, middle school, that has a very forward-thinking instructor who taught his kids about open source and Linux, and they actually imaged a bunch of the PCs in their school with Linux and began to use them. And I love what some of these kids said about it. Okay, this guy, his name was Mr. Dobby, the instructor. This is in a sixth grade class. And the students say things like, at the very beginning, we didn't even know how to re-image with Linux. This is a sixth grader. Mr. Dobby told us how to write steps for how to re-image Linux devices, and using those steps, we were trying to re-image the computers. The students were quick to add that the Tech Stewardship Program has become a portal for discussion about being advocates for the change they want to see in the world. Open source, folks. And they go on to talk about, another one here, this is another student says, I thought of it as just a fun experience, but as it went on, we continued learning and understanding how we were doing, what we were doing was making such a big impact on the world. This is cool stuff. So read this article, and if you want to get in touch with this guy, he gives his Twitter address where you could get in touch with him. And I got to admit, you know, my hat's off to him, so to speak, because he is teaching kids about the wonders of open source and about how beneficial it could be to use free open source software and control your own destiny. Yes, I'm just a little bit of a rebel at heart. Like I said, several areas of controversy in the program today. Instead of being mainstream Windows users, you could be a radical, you know, Linux open source user. All right. Next little radical thing I want to throw at you here. Why, if you have a small business, should you pay for Microsoft Office? I mean, the cheapest you could get it is, you know, maybe, I don't know, 50, 60 bucks if you found an amazing sale. Save your money. You're a small business, particularly if you've got to outfit 10, 20, 30, 50 computers. Use LibreOffice. Like I said, it will read and write Microsoft Word. It will read and write Microsoft Excel. It will read and write Microsoft PowerPoint. Has all kinds of tools, all kinds of stuff that are useful to you as an office suite. And they have a cheat sheet here from Tech Republic that's on our blog, drbill.tv. Check it out because it will give you all the information about using LibreOffice and switching over to it. I have personally switched a lot of people over to LibreOffice. That's all we use here at the house. My wife uses it. My son uses it. He uses it for schoolwork. She uses it to do reports for her work. I use it myself. It's LibreOffice. It's awesome. There goes more beeping. Pay no attention to the beeping. I'm telling myself that, as well as you. Anyway, so LibreOffice, good stuff. Hope you enjoyed the program today. A little heavier on the knowledge side today than usual. Particularly the Geek Project. That might have been a little techie for some. But I really enjoyed doing it. I figuring out how to do that, that was cool. I did some web surfing and found people who had tutorials. And I decided to make one that was clear and easy. Because some of them were hard to read.
Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, is a production of DrBillDaily.net with all the honors, rights, and privileges thereunto appertaining.